Hi, I'm Congressman Tim Ryan. I've been a member of the United States Congress for 17 years, serving in a district in Northeast Ohio that includes the city of Akron and Youngstown, and Kent and Warren, kind of halfway between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. I'm married to Andrea Zetz Ryan. She's a first grade school teacher. We have three beautiful kids. Mason is 16, Bella is 15, and Brady is 5. My wife teaches first grade school in Trumbull County and has been a teacher for about 15 years. And we're super excited about running for president and all the transformational initiatives that we are pushing in this campaign. If you want to learn more, you can go to timryanforamerica.com and make a contribution to the campaign or learn more about us. So my education policy is trying to get at the root challenges that we have in the education system, and I believe that one of the fundamental challenges we have is to deal with the trauma that our kids come to school with. So with my education plan, we want to focus on trauma-informed care, social and emotional learning. We want to make sure there's a mental health counselor in every school that needs one. We want to make sure that our kids have access to art therapy and music therapy and play therapy, really to deal with the trauma. We now know, you know, more about the brain and learn more about the brain in the last 20 years than we have in the previous 200 or 250 years. And so we want to implement those studies and that knowledge. And we've seen with robust social and emotional learning programs where we teach kids how to resolve conflict, how to de-escalate, how to self-regulate, that you literally take your brain out of fight or flight mode. And when your brain's in fight or flight mode, you cannot access the prefrontal cortex, your executive functions where you have your working memory, your ability to focus and concentrate, you know, the kind of decision making, the kind of things that are really important to be able to access as a young person. And what we've seen, once you deal with the trauma and once you deal with the fight or flight mode, that we see kids have an 11 percentile point increase in their test scores, which actually closes the achievement gap. There's a 10% increase in good behavior, a 10% decrease in antisocial behavior, so a 20% swing in what's happening in the schools. I also want to focus on vocational training. I think it was a big mistake for us to move away from vocational training. I want to make sure there's financial literacy in every school so our kids are learning really practical skills that they can take out into the world. I also want to make sure that there's a salad bar in every school. I want to make sure that there's a school garden in every school, and eventually really tie the school garden into the health program so we're teaching kids how to be healthy, be emotionally healthy, be physically healthy, know how to eat and cook and grow food. These are really essential skills that we've got to get back to. Again, dealing with the fundamental challenges that we have, our kids' health, both social and physical health, and giving them a skill that they can leave high school with that gets them on a track for employment in the trades that pay a good wage or on their way into a 1 or 2 year degree or on their way to college and in the law school or medical school. That's my commitment to you. I will be the education president. I'm extremely concerned, as probably many of you are, with what's happening with our climate. Andrew and I have three kids, 16, 15, and Brady's 5. And I'm really concerned at what we've done to the earth, what we've done to our water, our oceans, our lakes, you know, level of pollution and algae. It's been terrible what we've done with industrial agriculture and with industry, and now obviously with what's happening with climate. And so you will see from me in both the regenerative ag piece in this series and also in the industrial policy piece. What I've tried to do, and I consider myself a pretty practical person from Ohio, from the Midwest, is to say, how do we communicate our initiatives around climate in ways that are very inclusive. So, and I know some people get upset with me when I talk about this, but I say that, you know, there are a lot of workers in the United States who just don't have the bandwidth to consider what's happening with climate change. Not that they don't care, not that they don't worry about their own children's future, but if you just lost your job, then you're worried about paying your mortgage, you're worried about putting food on the table, so you don't get kicked out of your house. So worrying about climate is sometimes not available to people's brain space. And so I like to talk about what we're going to do to reverse climate change in the context of jobs. And that's why you'll hear with the industrial policy section of this, where I talk about electric vehicles and batteries and wind and solar and how we move to a renewable economy by building our way into that renewable economy to dramatically reduce what's happening with carbon. And you'll see in their regenerative agriculture piece, moving away from industrial farming, where regenerative ag sequesters carbon, and we've got a nice political coalition to do this. And so that's going to help sequester carbon. So my policies around climate aren't any different than my economic policy around creating good paying jobs for people or making sure farmers can make money and how we heal the soil and the water and the earth and bust up the big monopolies in agriculture. So this all fits together. And I believe that the next generation of ideas in the United States have got to be integrated. And that's what I've tried to do with all of my policies and ideas. How are they integrated? And so my climate initiative, too, is integrated. And in addition to that, moving towards a more distributive economy to where we're making sure that there's access to high-speed internet and broadband in rural communities. We rebuild downtowns and small and mid size cities with theater renovations and quality of life projects so that people can move and not have to drive to work and can telecommute and can even work for companies on the coast but be maybe in the Midwest or in the South but live in those communities because we've built them up, but at the same time reducing dramatically the amount of cars on the road and transportation that's happening. So all of these things fit together. And so I want to attack climate from multiple vantage points with multiple initiatives that lead to jobs, money for farmers, and healing the planet and reversing climate change by having a very integrated approach. I believe the most fundamental way we can deal with our climate issue and our environmental issues is to move to building out a regenerative agriculture system. Right now, we have monopolies that run agriculture, run by the big agribusinesses. We've seen what it's done to our environment with algae blooms in the Great Lakes and many other lakes around the United States, like Lake Okeechobee down in Florida, small lakes all over. We see the nitrogen and fertilizer runoff that goes down our rivers into the mouth of the Mississippi, where 220,000 metric tons of fish are killed every year by the nitrogen runoff. And, you know, obviously this is destroying our environment, the food that's being created in the industrial farming and industrial food system is sprayed with heavy, heavy doses of pesticides and herbicides and fungicides and poisoning our land. Our soil is completely depleted to the point where you need to eat 6 or 7 carrots today to get the nutritional value of 1 carrot from 30 years ago or so. And so we've lost the nutritional value. Moving to regenerative agriculture is great for farmers. They're actually making money because they reduce all of these inputs around pesticides and heavy uses of fertilizer. So they're actually the only farmers around that are really making money. It also techniques that don't release carbon because they don't till the soil. It's called no-till farming. They plant cover crops in the alternative parts of the year to really sequester carbon. So it can help us reverse climate change. It's good for the soil, builds organic matter in the soil. And for every 1% increase in organic matter for an acre of land, that acre can hold an additional 25,000 gallons of water. So it helps build the soil to be drought resistant and flood resistant. environment, sequesters carbon, farmers make money, less pesticides on our food, and helps the environment heal, helps the water heal, and helps the soil heal. This, to me, is first and foremost what we need to do when addressing climate. And the political benefits that make this very practical are that many of the regenerative farmers are Republicans and libertarians who don't necessarily believe that climate change is caused by man, but yet they want to do and practices around agriculture that sequester carbon. So we literally have a political issue that we can agree on, and over time we can reduce these farm subsidies because the farmers are making money, and put that additional revenue, that savings, back into rural America to build the downtowns, build the infrastructure, river walks, bike trails, renovating theaters in our downtowns, making sure there's clean water, that the rivers are cleaned. These are opportunities for us to reinvest back in the manufacturing in rural communities, making sure they have access to health care, broadband, so that you can attract businesses and skilled workers back into the downtown, affordable housing. That money will be available because it's no longer going to subsidies to some of the big agribusinesses. This is my plan for climate, my plan for rural America. It is doable and passable with both Democrat, Republican, Libertarian support. It's why I'm most excited about this. Go to TimRyanForAmerica.com. Help this campaign out. This is our big, bold vision for America. Healthcare is obviously a very important issue for many people. I believe that healthcare needs to be affordable, accessible, quality healthcare. What I would do with the current system, I want to do something that's doable, that's achievable. And I believe that we should lower the Medicare age to 50 and allow Americans to buy into the program. This is revenue neutral because Americans are paying for it. And Kaiser Permanente has said, the health insurance company has said, that for 60 million Americans between the ages of 50 and 64, that they will see a 40% reduction in their health care costs by taking this approach. I also believe that this will lower costs for private insurance because you're taking the oldest cohort, 50 to 64, in the private insurance market, and you're moving it into the Medicare program. And you're actually moving and creating a younger cohort that's going into the Medicare program, which should lower costs for them as well. You'll have a healthier pool in the private insurance market. I also think that we should allow small businesses to buy into the Medicare program because they're getting crushed right now with healthcare costs. This is doable. And I also believe there needs to be some public option, whether it's in the Medicare program or something separate, that every American can buy into. And if they can't afford it, we will help them, making sure that people don't have to go to the emergency room to access healthcare. There's another discussion we really need to have in this country that we're not having right now. And it's that this system that we're talking about right now is a disease care system. It's a system that really waits for us to get sick. It's a sick care system. And then we get sick, and then everybody pays for it. The pharmaceutical companies come in, and they make a bunch of money. The health companies come in, they make a bunch of money. I want to build out a new system that focuses on prevention, that actually has incentives for doctors and patients to get and stay healthy. So the doctors get a piece of the action for saving money, and the patients get rebates and refunds for getting and staying healthy. 75% of our healthcare costs are for chronic diseases that are largely preventable. That's two-thirds. It's about $3.5 trillion a year, trillion with a T. And so if we focus on reversing type 2 diabetes, reversing cancer, reversing heart disease, which we can do, and it's happening in different places across the United States, but it's not been systematized to where we can actually have this available for all Americans, we can save a ton of money. You take type 2 diabetes, for example, where a type 2 diabetic costs about $14,000 a year. With interventions that cost between $5,000 and $10,000, using food as medicine, we are reversing type 2 diabetes. And I've met people in rural Iowa, actually, who have Randomly got into programs where they have reversed type 2 diabetes, and they're getting off their medication, saving significant savings to healthcare costs. This is the direction we need to go in, and you can see this tie into the regenerative ag piece and the school piece, where I'm talking about teaching kids how to eat and cook and grow healthy food, and then having farming that's actually producing real food, not fake industrial food, but real food. All of my policies are tied together to move us to health, wellness, sharper education, and being more competitive as a country. And using food as medicine and making sure every American has health care coverage is essential to that. I hear more and more every day about the struggles with paying student loan debt. My wife, Andrea, and I have debt of hers that we're continuing to pay off. I think it's absolutely insane that we have banks charging 7, 8, 9, 10%, sometimes more on money that's been borrowed to go to school. I think that we should allow people to negotiate that rate down to, 2-3%, which would put, hundreds and hundreds of dollars in people's pockets that they could pay down the principal or buy a car or a house or start saving for retirement or whatever they wanted to do with it. And right now, to have the banks making this level of profit off of kids who wanted to get an education, I think is ridiculous. And I would move for us to negotiate that rate down to make it somewhat reasonable for these people who were just trying to get ahead. I also believe we should make at least the first 2 years of college free. There should not be any economic barrier to people getting a certification or a 1 year degree or 2 year degree to move us into the new economy. We've got to close the skills gap in the United States. A vast majority of the jobs of the future, over 90% really since the Great Recession, have required more than a high school diploma. And we need to make sure that there aren't any economic barriers for people to at least get 2 years of school for free, and which would also include helping someone who went to a four-year degree that would get the first 2 years paid for. I think that's a natural next step that we can take in the United States that is reasonable, that is doable. We have K through 12 today that is free for kids, and that was for the old economy, but the new economy requires more, and that means a new and better government that is addressing that issue to help us close the skills gap, increase opportunity, decrease income inequality, and really start rebuilding the middle class. We cannot be satisfied with $15 an hour. That's only $30,000 a year. We need $30 an hour. We need $40 an hour jobs, and that starts by making sure that the American workers have the skills they need to build the electric vehicles, the batteries, the charging stations, the wind and solar component parts, artificial intelligence, additive manufacturing, healthcare. All of these industries are going to need skilled workers, and my plan is going to make sure we're fulfilling that obligation that the public has to educate our citizens and prepare them to take advantage of opportunities in the economy. We've got to create a new economy. We've got to win the economy of the future. I'm going to start by making a bold statement saying we need to start building things again in the United States, and we need to actually have an industrial policy. One of the first things I'm going to do when I get into office is create the position of a chief manufacturing officer that will help us pool all of the resources of the country, not just the government, but of the country. So let me give you a few examples. If we're talking about electric vehicles, there's going to be 10 million electric vehicles built in the next 10 years. I want half of those made in the United States. So my chief manufacturing officer is going to pool who in the Department of Energy, who in the Department of Transportation, or the Department of Defense, or National Science Foundation, can help us achieve this goal? How do we sit them down at a table with venture capitalists, the big three auto companies, the emerging electric vehicle companies in the United States? How do we use the tax code and incentives to all get on the same page to say, how do we dominate the electric vehicle market? How do we have American workers building 5 million electric vehicles in the next 10 years? How do we unionize those jobs so that they're making $30 or $40 an hour? That's a living wage with benefits and retirements. And how do we create that industrial policy? And then we do the same thing with the batteries and battery storage that we're going to need for the electric vehicles. And we're going to do the same thing with the charging stations, the same thing with wind and solar. These are the things that the chief manufacturing officer will focus on. And communities will benefit from this. I also want to steer the growth, and because many of these industries and areas of the economy are growing by 25 or 30%. Additive manufacturing is growing by 25 or 30%. How do we dominate that industry? And then steer the investment into communities that have been left behind. Old coal, old steel, old auto, old textile, old rubber communities all over the United States. Drive this new investment, drive this growth and these new jobs into those communities. To me, that's essential. That's what the chief manufacturing officer is going to do. And when we create that wealth and those jobs in communities that have been left behind, there's more tax revenue for police and fire. There's more money available for the schools to pay school teachers more. More money available for local infrastructure to help with downtowns and local roads and bridges and all of that. That's why I want to get that growth and that investment into these older communities. But it starts with the chief manufacturing officer, who's going to report directly to me. We also want to focus on healthcare and research in the biosciences. There's huge opportunities for growth in these areas as well. I want the United States to dominate these industries of the future. We only have 330 million people in the country. We're competing with China with 1.3 or 4 billion people, India with 1.3 or 4 billion people. So you will notice as you listen to these snippets that all of this fits together. How do we get healthy? How do we heal the environment? How do we make college in 1 year and 2 year degrees and certifications affordable? How do we build out the next generation of manufacturing and the biosciences? How do we make sure that our kids are getting the social and emotional health that they need in order to learn in schools? This all fits together in a comprehensive plan around being competitive as a country, creating an industrial policy. This is how we move forward, but all of these broken systems need to be transformed and then integrated into a great attempt for us to be the most competitive country in the world and have the worker cut in on the deal on all of these things so that they're not burdened with heavy student loans. They have opportunity to make good wages. We have unionized jobs in a greater part of the economy to drive wages up for everybody else. We're investing into the future. That's the kind of America I want, where downtowns are vibrant, accessible, and energetic. But a lot of this starts with getting it right with the economy, and that means a new industrial policy for a new America. The issue around gun violence in the United States is infuriating that we've not gotten action on this. As president, I will push hard to get these things done. And we've got to win the Senate back. We've got to get rid of Mitch McConnell. We've got to get rid of Lindsey Graham and some of these others who have been roadblocks to common sense gun reforms around background checks, universal background checks, closing the Charleston loophole, which will make sure that, that people aren't getting guns that haven't been properly vetted, studying gun deaths and gun violence as a public health issued through the Center for Disease Control, having a ban on assault weapons and keeping weapons of war in these large magazines, 100-round magazine drums that we saw in the car of the kid in Dayton, Ohio. And I want you all to know that I take this very, very seriously. I will continue to be a leader on this issue. After Dayton and El Paso, I took a caravan of Moms Demand Action from Ohio down to Louisville, and we had a rally in downtown Louisville where Mitch McConnell lives. And we had a rally at the Muhammad Ali Center there with 1,500 people in just 24 hours were there protesting. The ground has shifted underneath the feet of the Republicans on this. Moms Demand Action, Every Town, these groups, Sandy Hook, Gabby Giffords group, they all have, they are now a counterweight to the NRA. We are going to win this thing. I'm looking forward to being president, to be able to sign these pieces of legislation into law, and we would appreciate your continued support. Moms Demand Action grew by 30,000 people after Dayton and El Paso. Things are moving. Things are different. I will continue to lead this. Thank you for your help and support. Let's keep going on this one. Immigration really has been the lifeblood of the United States for a very, very long time. My great-grandparents came here from Italy and family members way back when from Ireland. It has been one of the richest contributions to the success of the United States culturally and economically. I don't believe it's an either-or issue. I think we can both secure the border in the United States and do it in a modern way with technology, not building a wall in the middle of the Rio Grande River, if that's even possible. We use technology to do it. And what's happening at the border now is completely unacceptable, abhorrent, inhumane, where we're separating children from their parents and losing track of, you know, where the kids are. That is completely unacceptable in the United States. As president, I will protect those people who are coming into the United States seeking asylum. They should be processed here and then released to family or next of kin here in our country until the processing is finished. And we can do that here in the United States. But we also need comprehensive immigration reform where we allow people to come out of the shadows, to pay a fine, to pay back taxes, but then welcome to the United States over a 5, 6, or 7 year process. We were able to get this agreement in the United States Senate several years back with over 70 votes. So this is doable here, but we need a president that's going to lead on this issue, and I will lead on this issue. I will not participate in any of the kind of nonsense that President Trump has with the race baiting and denigrating people of color, shaming people, trying to divide the United States. We want to be united here. And we've seen that immigration contributes to our economic growth. Some studies are saying that comprehensive immigration reform will lead to 1.2 or 3% economic growth in the United States. We want to make sure that people who come to school in the United States can, in college and universities in the United States, can stay in the United States, contribute to our economy, grow our economy, start businesses, hire people in the United States, help us win the future. This is part of the comprehensive plan that I've been talking about in this series, of which immigration is a big part of that. So we can secure the border and have comprehensive immigration reform. And lastly, we need to address issues at the core. And what we're seeing is the migration coming from Central America is because Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador have been destabilized. And we need to make sure that our State Department, which doesn't have all its appointees yet appointed 2.5 years into the president's term, non-governmental organizations need to work together in Central America to stabilize those countries so people feel safe there, so they can stay home. Nobody wants to leave home. Nobody wants to run from gangs who will put their daughters into the sex trade or put their sons into a gang or kill them if they don't go. Stabilize those countries. Have security here in the United States so we know who's coming in the country, preventing drugs from getting into the country, but also have a compassionate, tolerant, comprehensive immigration reform. That's what I will do as president. I'm running for president, and I obviously believe that my ideas that you've heard here are essential to us transforming the United States. And I've been inspired by the people who are participating in these areas of the economy, have shared these ideas with me around food as medicine and regenerative agriculture and the future of work and social and emotional learning. And there's so many people across the country that are doing this work. I want to join you. I want to throw gas on these fires that are burning in the United States. United States, I believe underneath all of the political rhetoric that's happening on TV, that there is a nation ready to be born again, to transform these old broken systems with new ideas, to lead the world. As your president, I'm going to challenge every one of you to get involved and help be a part of the change, whether it's at a school or on a farm or in a hospital or doctor's office or anywhere in the country. We can do this. This is all doable. And what I love about this agenda is that, you know, you can go look around the country and see it happening. I'm not making this up. It's actually happening. What I want to do is infuse these ideas into these broken systems, rebuild these systems, transform these systems, and create a new country, create America 2.0. And I want you to help join me in this effort. It's going to take all of us. Go to timryanforamerica.com, send me some money, join, volunteer in some of the states to help us. We can do this. We can make this happen. And all of the Democratic candidates, in my estimation, are much better than Donald Trump. We have to come together as a country. We have to heal as a country. And I will just say that, you know, coming from Ohio, coming from a blue-collar community, I do believe I'm the best one to beat Donald Trump, to win Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Western Pennsylvania, the key states we need to have in order to beat Donald Trump. And we have the ideas that can not just beat him, but walk past him into our future with some of these ideas that will heal our planet, heal the economy, heal our children. Help me out. Go to timryanforamerica.com. We're going to come together as a country. We're going to unify. We're going to do what needs to be done. And we're going to step back into what America should be, what it needs to be, and what the world wants America to be. I would be proud to be your president to lead that charge. Thank you.